Hey everybody, I'm Julia.
I'm Miranda.
And we're here to do one thing.
Put the pee in raspberry. And just like the pee in raspberry,
everything we're about to say is completely pointless.
Every week, Julia and I will give our unwanted opinions on all things pop culture.
Because what the world needs now, more than ever, is another flamboyantly beguiling duo with a podcast that contributes absolutely nothing to society. Enjoy!
And you know what?
Hi! Oh my god, wait, I didn't even see you there. This is so hilarious because I was just talking about you. Oh wait, what's that? You're not HBO 1000 time Emmy winner Euphoria? Sorry. I'm Julia, here today with my co-host,
Miranda,
and one more person I do want to introduce.
Of course.
Rigatoni.
What's his full name? Give him a proper introduction.
Rigatoni Papadina Bertucci.
Thank you.
Hi, sweetie. So if you hear any licky licks or farty farts or jingle jangles, it's just my puppy. Don't worry. It's and Miranda and I are here today in persona.
In person, everyone.
It's so exciting.
Please be happy for us.
I'm very happy for us.
Me too.
We're hunched over the microphone right now, trying to make it work.
The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. A little France on a... This is actually a Saturday night for Miranda and I. This is like a weird glimpse into the future of Saturday night, wine drunk.
This is the rest of our 20s.
Have only consumed Girl Scout cookies, ordered food, it's downstairs, waiting to get to it. Greek, actually, if anyone's curious. We have French, we have Greek, we have rigatoni. It's a party.
So diverse.
And now we have Euphoria. Now, you guys might be wondering, wait, what exactly is this episode about? Okay, good question. Today, Miranda and I are actually going to discuss, we're going to do a little bit more of an educational episode for you youngins out there. And we're going to discuss the queerness in Euphoria. And I know what you might be thinking, like, queerness and Euphoria, okay, you're going to discuss, you know, ruined jewels and, you know, what else? And yes, we are, but we're going to discuss queerness as a whole and how, you know, there is queerness and Euphoria, but also how Euphoria conveys it and perhaps the representation is good at times, perhaps how it's bad at times. Mm-hmm. The tropes that are within it. There's a lot of queer tropes that are harmful and positive in Euphoria. And also the discussion of queerness as a whole and how our society simply does not convey it enough. And it's not an appropriate use. And it's not an appropriate portrayal of the world that we do live in. And especially that Euphoria takes place in California. Mm-hmm. This is what friend groups are. I mean, they're not even a friend group, but you know what I mean? This is what a high school is.
Demographic would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to be diving a little bit into queer theory, if I may. We're in our about to graduate college era.
Oh my
so
God.
So, if I may say so myself, we're pretty educated. Obviously, we're not the experts. We're always open to more conversation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're, like Julia was sort of saying, like, we want to think about queerness as in sexuality and gender, yes, but also the idea of queerness as just pushing back against boundaries, against norms, doing something different, which Euphoria has been, you know, touted for over the years. And I know it's been off there for a while. Julia and I actually had to watch a season 2 recap.
What is it about season 2 that I can't remember?
We blocked it out because we'll get into
it. It's like a weird form of trauma that it won't stay in my brain.
We forgot like half of the storylines. But season 3 is apparently filming in June.
In about a month, right,
from this podcast. Which means season 3 is going to come out in like a year and a half because, mm-hmm. you know, it takes them 5 months to film one episode.
I mean, by then we'll probably be working on it like in some capacity.
Yeah, we'll probably be on the show, but for now we'll just discuss it.
Imagine. Okay, wait, guys, stop. Don't let me get ahead of myself.
Don't get too ahead of yourself.
It's not funny anymore. Stop. Anyways, let's dive right into it because there's a lot to say because also, guys, yes, we want to talk about Euphoria because Zendaya is literally who this podcast is geared towards, her fans. Yeah. But there's something to be said. Even if we were not Zendaya fans, which, okay, we'd be dead in the brain if we weren't, all right.
Yeah.
But if for some reason you know, someone abducted us and it was only our bodies, our souls didn't exist anymore, and they made us, you know.
If we got a lobotomy, like.
Right. If I had a deep, deep, like, four-time lobotomy and I didn't care about Zendaya anymore, it still would be extremely hypocritical to have a popular culture podcast and not talk about Euphoria. Yeah,
especially for our generation.
Especially for our generation. I mean, Euphoria's been sort of cited as this Generation Z show because of especially the characters portrayed in it. It's this new era of this is the reality of school these days.
Yeah.
Now, I'll be honest.
Which has been controversial.
I was going to say, I'll be honest. It wasn't too much my reality because I was not like sucking and fucking, you know, at age 16. But that's also just me. That's also just me.
Everybody has their own story.
Everybody has their own story. I was relating to Kat in that first season. Yes, I was. But I never turned to the cams. But I will say, I think I was a bit naive because when this show first came out, and I do want to say, I'm genuinely sorry to anyone else who thinks otherwise. I was the first ever viewer of Euphoria. That's true. I talked about it on my talk show in high school well before anyone even knew what the fuck I was saying. Mm-hmm. When I would say Euphoria, people were like, why is she just saying a noun right now? Okay, people didn't know it was like a show and everything. I think in high school, there was a part of me, as much as I love season one, that was like, this isn't super accurate. Mm-hmm. And I think, weirdly enough, now that I'm older and I'm in college, looking back on it, I'm like, it actually is somewhat accurate. I just perhaps didn't know these things were going on when I was in high school. Do you know what I mean?
I remember people were like, this show is so stupid. Like, and also people
were saying,
like,
it should be a college show.
I'm Lexi. Like, right. I did nothing in high school. And it's like, yeah, I do agree with that it should be a college show just because I think that we have so much media that sexualizes high schoolers to an insane extent, which we will get into. And like, that's definitely something to be discussed, but like, no, like, people do have high school experiences like that. And like, to me, yeah, it wasn't me, but like, I definitely knew people who had things like that going on, whether it was dealing with addiction or whatever, like,
right.
You know, yeah, sure. It wasn't my story, but like, I definitely
related
to it in some way.
And that's the thing. It's like, I don't think you're automatically Lexi. It's just like, first of all, this is not just a friend group. Yeah. Maybe a friend group, tiny bit less accurate, but abortions, drug addiction.
Yeah.
I don't know what else.
Relationships.
But stuff sex, like that, like cheating, blah, blah, blah.
Sexuality.
It really was happening under your nose. You probably shouldn't know about it. And by the way, guys, Miranda and I are not saying this as people who went to school in like New York City and had ass, like hot thong wearing high school. Like, both of us grew up in small towns that, like I said, I just think it took us now being older to kind of look at the kids that are in it now and know our peers now who are being more honest. Guys, I remember there was this girl. This isn't all right, we'll talk about the queerness in a second. But, I mean, this is kind of queerness. There was this girl in my school. I believe I was in middle school. Oh, I must have been, because why would anyone care about this any older than that? And there was this rumor flying around that this girl fingered herself. And I was at a loss for words. Uh-huh. And everyone was. We were like, who fingers themselves? Uh-huh. Like, who, what woman masturbates? Like, that's crazy. Because we were in, like, sixth grade or seventh grade. That's not, it's not even interesting. Of course we felt that way. Yeah. Of course. I mean, you guys know I'm the horny, like, Cleopatra. I am, like, the horniest person in the world. But I also was someone who in, like, sixth grade couldn't even fathom the idea of drinking before 21. Mm-hmm. And then by the time I was a sophomore in high school, I was arrested and threw up in the back of a cop car for intoxication.
True story.
True story. So, like, people change. And, like, you realize things as you get older. And so, anyways. So, this was a big thing in my school. Like, we were like, oh, my God, that girl is crazy. Like, what is wrong with her that she fingers herself? And then I think she confirmed it. So I don't know. I don't know the details. I don't really care. But the point is, now that you're older, you think back to things like that and you're like, not only is that so funny and stupid, but I also bet half the grade was fingering themselves.
Yeah.
But it was just so unnormalized. And I know the first time I like masturbated, I was so like kind of embarrassed and felt weird. And I was like, am I a sex addict? I literally thought I was a sex addict because I masturbated. Okay. That doesn't make any sense. But I was like, I'm disgusting. Like, I'm thinking about it and blah, blah. And it's like, guys, I promise you, if you can take anything out of today's episode, whatever you're going through, keep in mind that there's, what, 7 billion people in the world or whatever.
Yeah.
Someone's going through the same thing. I guarantee at least hundreds. Yeah. And if it's masturbation, quite literally billions of others, quite literally, like, everybody masturbates. But it's like, we go through things that feel like the most embarrassing, exposing act in the world, like touching yourself, especially because as women, that's not, to this day, it's not super normalized. And we think that a woman is so sexual and liberating and free and crazy if she touches herself, when in reality, it's literally a biological, like, need for most people. But
it's also just healthy.
Keep in mind that, like, if there's something you're going through, you feel awkward, people relate to it. I mean, I used to think I was weird for sweating a lot. And then I went to college and everyone was like, I'm so sweaty. And I was like, wait, I'm so sweaty. Like, there's just little stupid things. Like, I get waxed and I always do my wax. I'm like, I'm so embarrassed. I have so much hair. And she's like, girl, what? Like, she's like, I have literally seen like 300 vaginas, if not more. She's like, you're not the hairiest. You're not the least hair. Like, she's like, it's, everyone's different. None of this matters. You're never going to be, it's like the same thing. You're never going to be the most beautiful in the world. You're never going to be the most, the ugliest in the world. Everyone's always going to love you. Everyone's always going to hate you. Move on. And so anyways, that's a great segue into talking about euphoria, because euphoria really does. This
is
what being
queer is about.
Queerness is, I was, so I'm in a class, you guys, called Queer Stories in TV and Film. And my teacher told us to name a moment in reality TV history that we feel is queer. Now, I didn't want to talk about, like, RuPaul's Drag Race or some reality TV moment in which two people of the same gender kiss, because I thought that's stupid. What's the point of explaining to someone a guy kissed another guy that was queer? That's whatever.
Yeah.
So I raised my hand and I said, Teresa Giudice flipping a table in Real Housewives in New Jersey. And my teacher said, my teacher was dying laughing. He was like, yes, I agree, but explain why that's queer. And I said, there is a part of queerness. This isn't all of it, but there's a part of queerness that is truly about staying true to yourself. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of bravery and a lot of self-love at the end of the day. I mean, if you're queer, so much of the queer community is forced to love themselves because the people in their lives will not. Because, okay,
Rig is snort snoring. By the rig.
I guess he is queer, and that is A-okay. He actually does have a little boyfriend named, oh, God, what's his name? Anyways, he has this guy he's obsessed with, this dog. Anyways, I know the owner's name. Rocky? Is it Rocky?
Riggy and Rocky.
I don't even think it is. I don't remember. Anyways, I'm tempted to say, like, OJ or something.
It's Rocky Blue?
What is it? Is it Zendaya? Ricky, you like Zendaya?
Of course he does.
He literally, guys, looks like a pig right now. It's the cutest thing. Because his belly looks pink, right? Anyways, so there's a part of queerness that you need to do sometimes what's in your best interest.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the queer community, unfortunately, is on their own. And that's why, you know, chosen family and found family is a humongous thing in the queer community, because there's so many individuals, especially youth, who come out for whatever it may be, whatever that coming out may be, that people around them do not support them. And so I just, okay, this is a stretch, but I just said Teresa flipping the table was a moment of, she had had enough. She was taking actions into her own hands. She said, fuck it, and flipped the fucking table. And I told my teacher, that is the c***iest thing you could do. And my teacher, I didn't even expect him to react, because he identifies as a queer man. And I didn't expect him to, like, react. He threw his head back, was crying laughing, and turned to me and goes, you identify with that word, referring to the word c***. And he goes, you identify with that word. He goes, there are some words that some people can say and others can't say. You can say that word because it's a part of your brand and who you are. And I'm not allowed to correct that from you or take that away from you, so I can't be upset with you now for saying that. And I was like, that's what? So what is going on? Then my friend was on Zoom that day, and my friend texted me going, do you self-identify with the word and I was like, I guess I do.
Yeah, he totally, like, put that on you. It was this wrong thing,
but it was so funny because I was like, true, because, like, I know the teacher pretty well because I had him last year, and so I was like, I'm really honored and privileged that he, like,
saw that
knows
idea.
I'm I guess I don't know. But anyways, guys, the point is, we're here to talk about queerness as a whole and how, like I said, Euphoria is not perfect by any means. But let's dissect what it is that makes us feel a certain type of way through the lens of queer theory.
Yeah. I would like to just say on a similar tangent, I don't know why what you're saying reminded me of this, but I just like have been thinking so much lately about how my queer friendships are like some of the best and like most beautiful relationships ever. And I don't even necessarily mean like I don't necessarily mean with my friends who are like actively like in queer relationships. Right. I just mean like I feel like you could even argue like any intimate relationships or friendships between women are like queer in a way, because I feel like women in particular,
women are like, yeah, absolutely,
the way that their friendships are so beautiful and so intimate and so close in like a very specific way. And like, yeah, anyway, so beautiful. And that's the way that we want to kind of talk about queerness today. Julia's taking a picture of Rig.
No, it's Rig. You and Rig to show, like, the process.
I'm hunching over the microphone. So uncomfortable.
So let's dive right into it because, and I agree with you, but I want to talk about, like I said, Euphoria specifically as it relates to queer theory. So first, let's go broad. Okay, so I want to talk about something that's, like I said in the beginning, you can't talk about popular culture these days, especially as it relates to TV and film, without mentioning Euphoria.
Yeah.
So, on a base level, Euphoria is good queer representation. I don't think that's a super controversial thing to say.
I would say I would agree with that statement more during, like, after season one. I think season two definitely, like, threw me for a loop.
I agree.
On that.
I agree. And so, but something I do want to note super quickly before we get down into like the, you know, nitty gritty is that Euphoria has been so celebrated for having a trans actress who plays a trans character, for having a black lesbian, mm-hmm. for having all of these fantastic, you know, array of identities. And that's fantastic. And I want Zendaya to literally be the richest person on the planet. I'm not kidding. But it's worth noting that we even note programs and projects as this when it should be the norm. If a yeah. show is taking place in California, in New York City, even in New Jersey, like surrounding, like whatever, queerness is alive everywhere. It's actually, we live in a very heteronormative society.
Yeah.
Which means when you see a guy and a girl, or what you perceive to be a guy and a girl walking down the street, you probably think either A, they're dating, or just B, even if they're not dating, they're both straight.
Yeah.
You have no reason to think, you know, this person is trans, this person is a drag queen, this person is gay, this person's pan, all of these things, right? Mm-hmm. This person's asexual, this person's aromantic, whatever. But we live in a queer society. Like, I'm not even trying to be like sound funny or whatever.
Yeah.
It's funny because same thing with, like I said before, with not noticing things in high school. So I used to be like, I know like one gay girl, and I was really good friends with her, whatever. And she was very, and I'm not saying this in any type of way, she's very quote-unquote stereotypical gay woman. Mm-hmm. Hated wearing a dress, cut her hair super short. Okay, whatever. Everyone knew she was gay since she was like 6. And I'm saying that because she was like my best friend, and so I know all this stuff, whatever. Now, everyone I know, like I just make friends. Normal friends, right? Mm-hmm. Just whatever. All of a sudden, we all have like the random night where they're like, I just slept with another woman. You know what I mean? And my friends in high school, too, have random nights where they're like, I like hooked up with a woman and I'm like obsessed with her. I'm in love with her and we're dating.
Make it more normal.
And so, what I'm getting at here is people don't think it's around them. And I'm like, it is. It is, babe. It's just a matter of whether or not those people are telling you.
I also think, personally, I don't know if this is, like, stupid, but I genuinely assume everyone is gay.
Same.
Like,
I told Miranda before this, I always consider her 100% gay.
Yeah,
I told Miranda, like, that.
It's hard for me to think of you not as a lesbian.
I'm like, you're I'm not a lesbian, gay. But... She's gay.
Whatever. I am gay. But, like, yeah, I was trying to remember as you were talking about high school, like, if I thought that way in high school. I feel like maybe a little bit, like, especially with, like, women, just because, like, we're much – I feel like a lot of women are, like, more comfortable with their sexuality than men tend to be. But anyway, yeah, like, nowadays, I just assume everybody is gay. And also, granted, I do go to a college where, like
– She goes to an all-girls school, okay? Like, that's real. That is real.
I go to Barnard College.
That's an all-women's school.
And Barnard College literally is known for, like, being super gay.
Mm-hmm.
Historically women's school.
Greta Gerwig went there.
Greta Gerwig went there. Put Barbie on your calendars. Anyway, so yeah, like, I think that's definitely influenced me. But still, in other contexts,
but you go to all-girls school. I go to Syracuse University. That's the biggest college of frat piss shit and, like, foot toenails. You know what I mean? It's no, but it really, it's a big college of, like, just frat boys.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because, guys, okay, this is, like, I don't really think, like, people in my sorority, except for my closest friends, listen to this podcast. Or, I mean, some people, whatever. But, I've been the president of my sorority for my last year. And I've had weird moments with girls drunk where I'm like, you like women. Like, yeah. I just have, you know when, like, a girl goes to another, oh my god, I love you, I would kiss you right now, like, you know, they just say that, but then gets to a point where they're like, seriously, if I was gay, I would throw you, and you're like, wait, what?
One of my biggest pet peeves is women who are like, I love women, like, I'm attracted to women, like, I would kiss them, but oh my god, I could never have sex with them, or oh my god, I could never, like, be in a relationship with a woman. I'm like, right. What? Like, where is that coming from? Because but that feels, like, very...
No, I agree. But I've had instances of women, like, they love, like, they've hooked up with a lot of guys, whatever. And in a frat, I'm just like, hey, that's it. Like, I'm just saying, hey. And they're like, I love you. I'd kiss you. And I'm like, oh my God, yes, Ellie. Mwah, mwah, mwah. And then they're like, seriously, I would kiss you on the mouth if it wasn't. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, and it just
Julia
gets to a point
is so wanted.
Where I'm like, it's, there is probably something there. Not, like, for me specifically, but just, like, in general in your life that I'm, like, don't want to act on it because you are with all these frat guys. And so that's, like, a whole – and also we can also talk about – we're not going to today, but I'm saying also the whole idea that as a sorority girl or anyone who's associated with, quote-unquote, frat guys, anytime you're going to kiss another girl, it's going to be sexualized.
Yeah.
And it's going to be viewed as the hottest thing and blah, blah, blah.
And so, there are women who, you know, project that onto themselves and, like, really, unfortunately, play into that misogynistic thing.
Right. And so anyways, I just want to say, Miranda and I were both born in New York City. Were you not?
I was not born in New York City, but I'll take it.
I thought you, like, lived there for a bit.
No, I lived in New York from, like, second to fifth grade.
Okay, girl, I'm sorry. You barely remember life before second grade. Like, that's...
Yes, thank you. I was born in New York City. Sorry, guys. Clarification.
Okay. So I was gonna say... We were both somewhat from New York City. My family moved to the suburbs, New Jersey. But my mom works, like, for Pfizer, and I've been going to New York basically since I was, like, I think I finally stopped going with her when I was, like, 13 or something. Mm-hmm. But so I'm extremely used to, like, the city. Whatever. The point that I'm trying to make is if you're going to set your show, which, first of all, anywhere is queer, obviously. But especially if you want to set it in a place that's literally considered, like, the melting pot of America. Also, America as a whole is considered, like, a melting pot of a country where you cannot guess what race, what religion, what anything someone is just by saying, oh, they live in America. I suggest you include some queer characters. And this brings me to my next topic of Jules and Rue. Now, first of all, Miranda and I were together the first time they ever kissed.
Wait. Do you remember? To go back because it sounded like you were saying that Euphoria takes place in New York.
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
Well, I was just saying because I can't relate to California, but I'm saying if you want to take place in, like, okay, so fine, let's connect it back to California. I'm just saying America in general is, you know, that, like, I'm just saying, it's like, it's astonishing to me that all these other, all my favorite shows, everyone's straight, everyone's white,
right.
Everyone's, like, Catholic, or it's just, like, it's not realistic.
Yeah.
Everyone's below a size 2.
Yeah.
It's not realistic. And so I want to talk about Jules and Rue, because obviously, when we say queerness and euphoria, that's probably the first thing everyone thinks of, which is fair because they're two women.
Yeah.
Who are together at some points, I guess not all the time, but they're, you know, romantically involved. First of all, I do want to note really quickly because I'm a fellow mixed woman like Zendaya, same skin color as her. She's the reason that I love myself. Shout out Z. And I do want to say really quickly that it is very refreshing. We do need to note the lack of labels in Euphoria.
Yeah.
Which some people there, I've met a lot of queer people who say it's, you know, they want labels and it's frustrating to not have labels. It's
a complicated thing.
It's complicated because if you're idolizing someone for being queer and they have never said anything of the sort, that's complicated. But at the same time, there's a pressure on a lot of queer individuals to feel like they need to label themselves when they don't want to, right?
Yeah.
So it's a back and forth. I do want to note really quickly that having Zendaya in the show and having her not have to sort of talk about her blackness is refreshing. And even with her sexuality, to not sort of have to sit there and have a big think piece moment where she's like a Maya Angelou type character, educating everyone. Do you know how hard it is to be a black lesbian? Blah, 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 blah. That is important. So much of the time, that's important. That is, I'm not saying don't do that. But it was somewhat refreshing to watch this woman I love, who I view as like another version of myself, not label herself and to assume the audience is smart enough to understand, oh, she's very attracted to Jules in a way that she's not attracted to any other character. Perhaps she likes women. Perhaps she's gay. And yes, we understand she's black. Yes, we understand. We're sure there's struggles that come with that. But because also it's worth noting that Zendaya has a million other privileges. Miranda and I were talking about it before this episode. She is extremely skinny. She is gorgeous. There's no one I've ever met that denies that Zendaya is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. You know, she's tall. She's all of these. Even as a mixed woman, though, she has very wavy sort of, what's the word? Like relaxed hair. Like she's, you know, I actually have much tighter curls than her. Like just, there's a lot about her that is privileged. So it's also like, we don't need her being this black educator when she's a light-skinned mixed woman who just likes girls. And I also like that normalization of just liking girls as another girl.
I also feel like it's more accurate to our generation.
Absolutely.
I think that a lot of people are leaning more toward away from labels. Because also I feel like, in a way, it creates space to like normalize just liking who you like.
Going with the flow.
That I really like about Euphoria is the way that like Rue just like brings Jules home, and like at some point her mom is like, oh wait, like are you guys dating? And it's just like a normal, like it's like a cute, like, oh my God, you're dating. Like it's cute. And so like I do really like that. I do want to go on a slight tangent just because I was reminded of this. In the show Hacks, which is another HBO show, really good, I recommend.
Please hire us, HBO.
Hire us. Sponsor us. There's this scene, and this was crazy because I've, like, never seen queerness described this way in media at all. And it was, like, one of the main characters, Ava, she was just talking about queerness, whatever, and the other character asked her, I think she asked her, like, do you think it's, like, a choice to be gay? Like, that question. And she was like, no, I don't think choice is the right word. I don't think that I like decided to be bisexual, but I do think it's a choice whether or not to like explore your sexuality and like think like that and, you know, live life in a queer way and whatever. And it's actually so funny because later in the episode, she's like talking to this lesbian couple and the same question about like choice comes up and she's like, oh, no, like it's not a choice. I was born this way. And like, it's so funny because it's like, I do feel like a lot of conversations about queerness can be like that because a lot of people are like born this way, like whatever, which comes out of a defense. Like it's because people have tried to invalidate queer identities that queer people have responded defending themselves being like, well, I'm born this way. Like I can't change, you know, against conversion camps, et cetera, et cetera. But anyway, I really liked that conversation about like, not saying that choice is like the right word necessarily with sexuality, but just that it can be a choice whether or not to explore that. And I feel like it sort of relates to the like no labels thing because it's just like just living life and like deciding what you want to do, who you want to be with, who you want to live your life with, like all of that sort of stuff. So it can be so nice when that's represented.
I agree. It's also, I mean, it's also true. There's a lot of people who don't recognize their queerness until they have explored it first. Whereas on the opposite hand, there are a lot of people who say, no, when I was 4 years old, I knew
that I was. And also, you don't even have to like physically explore it with another person. Just like mentally allow yourself to think outside of the boundaries and norms that society pushes onto you, which is normally heterosexuality.
Right. And I do want to say before we move on to the next sort of part of euphoria that, you know, I am really grateful for my generation, and I constantly say I was born in the right generation because, yes, all of the hatred's still alive. Like, we're not denying that. Yeah. But to know it is much more fluid. Actually, interestingly enough, I had a friend who was very confused by another one of my friend's interest in a non-binary person, which I'm not even going to dive into the problem of that because this friend of mine viewed the non-binary person basically as a woman based on their name, which was, I mean, that's not okay. But she was very stumped by that. And she was very like, do you like women with queer? Just very confused and mind boggles. Within 2 years, she had already hooked up with a woman and never questioned anyone else's decision ever again. And that's not what it needs to be, of course. Like, you don't need to have sex to understand these things. But I do think there is something quite nice about, I feel like, our generation's ability to, like, adapt and grow and understand that, like, yeah, maybe I was confused about it before, but now it doesn't bother me.
I remember in high school, I knew this girl, and she, I don't know, I used to never, before I was, like, out or whatever, I would never, like, explicitly say I was straight or whatever. And so this girl, like, was like, at one day she was like, oh, like, are you like not straight, whatever? And anyway, and then she asked me, because I hadn't really been with, I don't think I had been with anybody really at that point, and she was like, well, how do you know like you're bisexual if you've like never been with a woman? I'm like, how did you know you were straight before you were with a guy?
Exactly,
because I know that you knew.
Exactly.
Like, and she was like, oh. And it's like, yeah,
that's like what I'm saying. Just heteronormativity of how is that the norm? Why is it you look at your four-year-old son and say, oh my God, you're going to break a girl's heart? Why do you know that? Yeah. And why is you saying that to him not a form of sexualization? But if I say to a four-year-old boy, oh, are you in love with this other boy? It's stop sexualizing him. Stop putting that on. You know what I mean? Like, it's really, there is a sexualization of queerness in general.
Yeah.
And we view queerness as a sort of, not we, not Miranda and I, but society views it as some sort of sick, despicable, sex-addicted way of living. And it's just not, because all of the queer people that I have ever met are more accepting to any idea, by the way, more accepting meaning literally anything than any self-identifying straight person that I've ever met. And that's, I'm not saying that as a form of hatred, but I'm just saying there's nothing to back that statement up. And if you want to talk about sex work, yeah, they were pushed into sex work because trans individual, queer individuals have pushed into not being hired for jobs, not being given a chance to fend for themselves. If you want to talk about the realness, you know what I mean? The realness of it all. Trans individuals, girl, if you're not giving real, you're not being hired for that job. Look at who works on Wall Street. It's white, cis, straight men because they can play the part. So of course trans individuals are being pushed into sex work. It's not that being queer makes you a sex addict. That's just not what it is. It's the fact that you won't allow them into your neck of the woods. So this is the other option.
Yeah.
And I want to mention really quickly too, because like we're talking about like tropes and stuff, and the huge trope is trans sex workers. And even I love Bob's Burgers more than life, but that's, it's a big thing too, of like these drag queens come in and whatever. It's a huge thing on shows that when you see some sort of sex worker, there's an implication, oh, they have an Adam's apple. It's an, you know what I mean? Implication of something. Cal and Jacob in Euphoria. Wait, did I just say Cal and Jacob?
Yeah.
Wait, what I meant this? Cal and Nate. No, Cal and Nate.
Yeah, yeah. But what is the Nate guy's, Jacobs, the boyfriend's name? Cal's who? Boyfriend. From high school.
I don't know, Ricky?
Anyway.
I don't think we got the name.
Okay.
Is it not Ricky?
I don't think so.
I'm thinking of Pose. That's why. Have you ever seen Pose?
No.
Shame! I know. Shame, wizard! Anyways, so Guys, I want to talk about really quickly, and this is something that I didn't even really think about before. When you're selling a teen drama, especially to our generation and like the generation probably right before us and stuff, like millennials, queerness, when it comes to conventionally attractive white men, sells. Mm-hmm. If a white guy is in love with like another white guy, it sells. That's a fact. That like 13-year-old girls go crazy for that. The issue is Cal and Nate, arguably, which we can talk about, but arguably being some sort of queerness, some sort of queer, right? But being the villains of the show reinforces this, what my teacher calls the murderous bisexual stereotype, which is this there's a bunch of a million different tropes when it comes to queerness, right? But a lot of times with bisexual characters, there is this trope and this idea that whenever they express their bisexual side, they're being violent, murderous. You see it a lot in horror films.
Biphobia is real.
You see it a lot in horror films, especially it's with men, though, often. Yeah. With women, bisexuality is often conveyed as they're like sex addicted. And
they're cheaters.
It's usually a form to rebuttal against their male partners. But with men, it's usually a form of they're sick and twisted and they're addicted to like some guy they can't have who's straight. And so they're going to go on a rampage and kill these other people and blah, 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 blah. And or kill the person they love because they're so addicted. And it sucks because Cal's story with his, you know, young lover when I believe they were in high school and everything was kind of great and beautiful. When you're first watching it, you're like, what is this? This isn't Euphoria. This is like a cute, like little love story, like, you know, between two guys. Okay, cute. And then you realize all that it's led to of a guy recording himself having sex with minors and which is not only illegal, but despicable and just immoral and all of these things. And it's led to Nate serving, you know, messing with Jules and Maddie to an extent that I can't even understand. Literally, Miranda and I, we watched the season 2 recap and he put the gun to his head against Maddie. Miranda couldn't even look at the screen. Like, he is the definition of a bad person. And listen, I understand you want to make your bad character like a hot actor, whatever. But by making him and Cal, these sexual beings, because they're both sexual, regardless of sexuality, too, they're both sexual in general. These sexual beings who specifically have a history of hooking up with men. Nate has all these dick pics on his phone, all of these things. It's a form of violence. And you're reinforcing this stereotype of, first of all, not only that this murderous bisexual stereotype, but also the stereotype that whoever is like the most homophobic in the room is probably just gay.
I hate it.
Which is so harmful. Because number one, it's okay. First of all, it's not the reality. Okay. But second of all, even if it is, where do you think they got that from? If someone is closeted and they're gay, right? Mm-hmm. Especially a boy, let's say in high school. So where do you think they got the idea to rebuttal their feelings with violence against out gay people?
Yeah.
From you! From all this programming saying that's just what closeted gay people do. And if you beat people up, they won't know you're gay.
Or even like the fucking trope, which is like along similar lines where like the homophobic bully comes out and becomes nice and then
sex education.
I was gonna bring up sex education because of what the hell was that? And it's like a similar thing of just like these people who are just like supposed to be like very sexually repressed or whatever just take it out on other people and are extremely violent and hateful toward other queer people. It's just terrible. It's just terrible representation. I know that it does happen in real life to a certain extent.
Well, everything happens. I mean,
like
of course.
Julia just said, they're getting this idea somewhere. And it's like, why not just give us more positive representation? Like, doesn't make any sense. And I will say, I think that beginning of that episode where Cal has his like backstory is in a way sweet. But also, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I honestly don't remember everything from this season, but I think they're like, I think their characters are like on the wrestling team or something. And so there's this scene where they're like physically fighting, but it's like kind of like sexual. And it's like, okay, like, you know, to each their own, maybe that's like a sexual act. I don't know. But I do feel like that's a common thing in TV shows where it plays out where, like, especially with two gay men, where the way that they act on their sexual and romantic feelings is through, like, a physical fight. Which I just think is, like, so silly. And I know that it's, you know, a comment on toxic masculinity and all of this stuff, but I just am like, I don't really need to see that. I think it plays into the same thing of, like, why do we need such negative representation? I don't think that this is teaching anybody anything good. Just change it. Change the storyline.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. If you just have more representation, then a problematic representation or a stereotypical representation is not harmful. It's the issue of when that is the only thing out there that people have to reference who don't perhaps know about this community or this field or whatever it may be that you're conveying, that it starts to hurt. Yeah. If the only thing someone has to reference is, oh, any guy who hates gay people is actually just gay himself. That's an issue. You know?
It's so bad.
And so, or even, you know, any gay guy who's not comfortable with his sexuality is gonna do terrible things such as recording minors, you know, catfishing, jewels, you know what I mean? Like, whereas, let's think about all the straight white people you've seen on TV. I can name a million tropes that are good and a million that are bad.
Yeah.
Because there's a million, there's so much representation out there.
Yeah.
It's not even considered representation because it's just the norm. So if we have, you know, a show where a man is abusive to his wife, I'm not seeing a white person in the street and assuming he's abusive to his wife.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that is not the only representation out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's just a million representations of a man treating his wife like she's everything. So that's the issue, is when you only want to put, you know, two guys, arguably one, because Nate's like, whatever, just Cal in your show is a guy who somewhat likes other guys, and this we want to make him, then that's what you're conveying to the world. You know, it really is. And it hurts. And
That there are definitely negative stories that are important to tell. Like, for sure, like, what you're saying. But, yeah, if that's the only thing out there, it's like, what else are you supposed to know about any of these stories and this representation that's happening? And, yeah, I would like to say, like, I think a lot of people, especially after season two, I guess, were discussing how, like, Nate is supposed to be gay. And I would say, like, I definitely disagree with that. I think this is a place where, like, I appreciate the thing about, like, no, Julia is freaking out because her dog farted and she's, like, dying from the smell.
I'm sorry, I'm just laughing. Okay, continue.
I can't even smell it.
So how'd you know he farted then?
Because you were waving in the air. I'm not stupid. She's, like, waving the scent away in the air.
Guys, it's like an atomic bomb. Okay, continue.
Anyway.
It's fine.
There are a lot of people arguing that Nate is supposed to be gay.
He's not even a farter, by the way. He's like, that's not...
We're moving on.
He's not like a big, gassy dog. He's just like doing it right now to like be funny.
And I think that like, the labels question is two-sided to me because I think for one thing, it's up to everybody individually. Like if we're talking about real life, like, yeah, some people really appreciate labels. Some people don't like them so much and everything should be accepted. But I think this thing of, like, people really took that and ran with it and then, like, were trying to label Nate as gay. And also I think it's super problematic because some people were like, well, he's actually, like, really in love with Jules, which that I disagree with because what kind of love is that? But whatever. And obviously that doesn't make him gay because Jules is a woman, so makes no sense.
That's what I don't understand either.
So yes, I know there's like the thing with the dick pics on his phone and like all of this sort of stuff, and I definitely do think the show is like commenting on his repressed sexuality in general, but I would say like I do have a slight problem with people being like, Nate is gay, because I just don't think that that's really a statement that is accurate or that you should be making. Like, just let him be labelless like everyone else. You know what I mean?
It scares me when people say that Nate is gay because he has romantic feelings for Jules.
Yeah.
Because you are saying a man is gay for having romantic feelings for a woman. So that scares me.
It's transphobic.
Because you're just confirming you view Jules as a man, which is transphobic and extremely offensive, and she is a woman. And that's not something we're here today to explain, because I would hope that's just common sense at this point, but that weirds me out. Although, yeah, I mean, I do think Nate's a little fruity, but okay. Yeah.
I mean, I think
not because of the Jules thing. I'm just saying, but I'm saying when people say it's because of Jules, I'm like, that's genuinely offensive. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not
I think that the show is commenting on his repressed sexuality. I don't know that that means he's a homosexual, but like, I think that people are sort of jumping a little bit when they're like, oh, he's gay. Because it's like, I don't know if you're, I mean, he's definitely repressed. He's definitely has this very strong sense of what it means to be a man, who he should be attracted to, what type of woman he should be attracted to. Like, yes, I agree with all of that, but I think that people really take it and run with it in a way that is just unnecessary to viewing the show and enjoying the show.
I agree. And I really quickly want to talk about, so a huge part of this show is intersectionality, right? And it's really important to note, because fans' reactions is 50% of the show.
Yeah.
And I genuinely believe if this show came out before Twitter, before all of this stuff, it would not have the success that it's had, because so much of it is what the fans say. And all the actors say that themselves. Girl. All the actors say that themselves. Like Zendaya, all these actors say, you know, it's the fans that are like, you know, keeping us going and building this storyline and all of this stuff. And so I genuinely don't know if my dog has eaten like baked
he
beans.
He farted again and I smelled it.
While Miranda and I have been looking away. But like, guys, he's like not a gassy dog at all. Like, maybe it's just like emphasized because we're in a small room with him.
Yeah.
But it's like death by, you know, fur.
We're going to pass out by the end of this recording.
It's bad. Death by Italians. Because this is rigatoni. Anyways. Hi, handsome. He's so handsome. Anyways. So, and what was I saying? Rig, you messed me up. So, intersectionality is a huge part of this. And, oh, like I said, the fan reactions, right? And it's worth noting that a lot of fans' opinions are very skewed by what the actors look like, right? And I've had a lot of people come to me and say and ask if Jules is trans. A lot of people ask if Jules is trans, slash, or they just don't know it at all. I mention it and they're like, what are you talking about? Whereas I've had like 6 people assume I'm trans, which is fine, but like worth noting the way that the world views a black woman versus a white woman, right? And the fact that Jules Hunter Schafer is going to be viewed as more feminine because she is genuinely a skinny, you know, white blonde woman, right?
Although I agree with you, although it is not to say that she does not also receive a lot of transphobic
hate. No, not at all. No. Of course.
The two things can be true at the same time, and I think a lot of time people don't understand that.
Absolutely. No, I'm not saying it like that. Like, no, absolutely. No. I'm not saying I'm like more oppressed than Hunter Schafer. I'm just saying, let's talk about intersectionality for a sec, right? And, but 100%. You can look at it through different lenses. Is what
no,
I'm trying
I totally
to say.
Agree
and you can look
you.
At it through
just,
the lens of she's a white woman versus she's a trans woman. And you know what I mean? Like, I agree. I would never in a million years say that. Like, genuinely, the comments that Hunter Schafer and Jules as a character, like herself, receives is disgusting. I would never in a million years like rebuke that. So anyway, no, 100%. I wasn't like making it about me either. I was just saying too, I want to talk about intersectionality, and that's there's different hats that everyone wears, right? Yeah. And so I wanted to know, the reason why I was thinking about it too was because I saw a gross tweet the other day saying that, you know, oh, if you prefer Zendaya over Sydney Sweeney, you must like Neanderthals. And so there's that side of things that we can't ignore, right? And so one of the reasons why I wanted to mention intersectionality as well is because of Barbie's character, Kat, who I was actually a fan of in season one.
Yeah, totally.
I was a fan of. Barbie came out with an interview somewhat recently, if you guys want to look it up, where she talked about her exit from Euphoria, which, by the way, is a very sad exit because there was no send-off. Her character just literally stopped, like, showing up.
They just
up.
Took away her storyline. Like,
right. There was just no storyline. Her one storyline was she was tired of Ethan. Like, it was...
It was so awkward.
That's... Like, every time she came on the screen, me and my friends were like, oh.
And then she was just there to, like, be Maddie's best friend.
Yeah. Yeah. And so... Barbie sort of just came out and said, like, you know, Sam didn't know what to do. It was a mutual decision. I think it's a shame.
As in, Sam didn't know what to do with her character.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a shame that in this show in which we celebrated queerness, which queerness, I think, above all else, is about acceptance. And not only acceptance, but celebration. And uplifting those traits and characteristics about someone that they might hate most about themselves. And I'm not just talking sexuality. I think queerness is the whole encapsulation of to hell with, like, insecurities, to hell with what's expected of you in societal norms.
Also it's, yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's also about pushing against boundaries. It's pushing against these structures that we have in place that are hurting people, that are unhealthy for us, that are putting us in boxes, like, all of that. I think it's also largely about, like, an exploration and a pushing against those norms and those boundaries.
Right. And so I think it's a shame that in a show that tries to celebrate queerness, and we do have great, I mean, Hunter Schafer's episode, the Jewel special episode, if you guys haven't seen it, there's two bridge episodes. The first one is Rue. The second one is Jewels. It's gorgeous. Hunter Schafer co-wrote it. And I mean, it's beyond talented. But in a show that can accomplish all that, the writer, which I don't know why we have one writer, there should be 20, but the writer was stumped with what to do with the big girl.
And so she just left the show.
So how is that? I'm just confused because Kat is not the only girl in California to look like that, or the world, or at, like, I it's frustrating to me that the only somewhat good representation we can get, though, is from size zeros. And I don't think that's fair. You know what I mean? And it really makes, and, you know, Barbie was like, it was for the best, and I'm happy she's happy now. But that shouldn't have been the case. Why was the one person kicked out of the show, forced out, because she was forced out. I don't care how it's phrased. She was forced out. She had no other option. A bigger girl.
Yeah.
Why didn't, you know, anyone else, I mean, maybe they do and we don't know, but I can't make an assumption, but why was her character erased from the storyline? Was she not as profitable to you? Was that not as exciting? Because I relate to girls like Kat so much in the sense that we grew up in these small towns. I don't know how small, like, the town in Euphoria is supposed to be, whatever, but we've grown up in these small towns. And when we walk into a room, the entire room has no interest in what we have to offer. And guys, if you're looking at our Instagram right now and you're like, Julia's gorgeous, thank you, I agree with you. But you would be astonishingly surprised by, it's not even about rejection I experienced. It's about the cruel treatment and behavior that I endured literally every day growing up because guys did not want to fuck me. Like, that's what it was. And I was never ugly. I never have been and I never will be. And I'm not. I'm not ugly. Neither is Kat. Neither is anyone I've grown up with, any of my good friends. But they saw my skin color and literally said no. And I've related to Kat's, like, insecurity of, like, in season one, like, her kind of having to prove her sexuality to those twins and all that. So, like, I really, really, really resonated with that storyline because I did not become, like, sexually active and stuff until college because, like I said, everyone thought I was disgusting in my high school because they're brain dead. And so I really respected and loved the route they're going with that. But guess what? Sam Levinson never thought to ask Barbie her thoughts, ask her to contribute to the conversation that she is directly the topic of, didn't ask for any other writers to come in and help him. And so therefore, her storyline went down the drain. He didn't care about it. And she was forced to leave the show. And that is the opposite of queerness, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Because that what I just said spells out exclusion. Spells out no diversity, no range. And Sam, I'm sorry, but Sam Levinson is giving me the guys in high school that didn't want to fuck me. Giving the guys that they you walk into the room and they say, I can't do anything with this. So rather than still, you know, being with them and just not making them my number one, just not fucking them, but still hanging out with them, I'm not even going to treat them like a human. I'm not going to look in her direction. That's what Sam's giving. And so I'm sorry to Barbie. I'm sorry to anyone, you know, watching the show that liked Kat and all of a sudden was like, okay, so there is no character here. There was no three. And obviously, guys, Sam is not an idiot. He knows how to write. There have been scenes with Rue that are the most beautiful, heartbreaking things I've ever seen in my life that connect with viewers. Obviously, this show is so critically acclaimed already in the first two seasons. Obviously, it's huge, but he is now, he's given up.
I mean, what's also crazy about it to me is that Sam, mostly by Zendaya, but also by other people, like especially Hunter with the Jewel special episode, has been called very collaborative and has been, you know, celebrated for that. And even though people have been like, oh, he's the only writer, but like he collaborates with his actors, like Malcolm and Marie, like he collaborated with them, whatever. But I think that it's so telling about whose stories are good and when they seem authentic. Like, Jewel's special episode seems authentic and it's very beautiful and very good because you can say they actually collaborated and Hunter actually wrote on that episode. Whereas, like, I think also especially after, like, the stuff about the idol coming out, like, that's a case where he was like, no, I don't like this. I'm scrapping it and I'm rewriting the whole thing myself. Like, that's fucking crazy, first of all. But second of all, like, I think it shows, like, he's perhaps not always open to collaborating with everyone. And maybe he just, like you were saying, like, just completely gave up on Barbie and was like, I'm not even gonna, like, really entertain a collaboration with
because
you.
Because he saw Maddie and Cassie being these standout characters. So he said, who cares?
Which is crazy, too, because it's like,
which is disgusting. What do you mean, who cares? Then don't write in Kat as a character.
Yeah.
Why is she part of the cast, then, if you're going to give up on her after one season? What is that about?
And Jewel's, too. Like, Jewel's special episode happened, and then what happened? It's like, everybody forgot that that episode ever happened. Jewel's is barely in season two.
Jewel's is, like, not a part of a show, and she used to be the second main character. The second biggest character, and all of a sudden she's not a part of the show. And when she was, it was like to serve Nate's character more.
Yeah.
Or to smile or at Elliot. Rue across. Oh my God.
Oh my God. We haven't even talked about Elliot. I don't even want to talk about it, but like, let me just say, season one.
Come on, Apple Tattoo.
Please.
He has this crazy
Apple
Tattoo.
I know, it's insane. I was. After season one, I was, like, one of the biggest Rules ride or die fans. Like, I was on Twitter literally fighting people who were calling them toxic because I have a lot of opinions on it and I love them. And also, like, it just came out at a time in my life where it was, like, so relatable. And season two ruined them. Why in the world would you bring in this guy into this relationship to not only – there's the whole thing with him enabling Rue's addiction, but also just – to, like, be a dude who fucks up this queer relationship between two women. Like, okay, like, why would you do that? In what world is that a good idea? And also, why do we need him to sing a song for 5 minutes in the season finale?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Please tell me. So, forgot to mention that earlier, but, like, I
Dominic Fike must have had something on Sam Levinson or something. Literally.
I truly used to love Rue and Jewel's so much. And, like, it was so... I cannot describe how disappointing season two was to me in that realm. I mean, in other ways as well, but like the fact that I did genuinely feel like we had really quite good representation with their relationship in the first season, and then season two, it just truly went down the drain is just crazy to me.
I mean, I
and like if you wanted them to break up, you could have written that in a better way. You know, like I was just about to say that.
I liked Rules, but I kind of mostly liked them just because it was Zendaya and Hunter, and then it got to the point in the show where I was like, they're not, you know, they can't be together right now for like the characters, you know, they can't be together right now for their own good. But that doesn't mean I wasn't furious with the Elliot storyline. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I...
And also, like, I feel like it would be so much more beneficial and so much more beautiful to watch if, yeah, okay, they can't be together right now, but they work through some stuff or whatever, and then they're, you know, able to have a relationship. Like, whatever. Like, yeah, I understand that it wants to be more realistic, whatever. Rig. And they're not gonna perhaps be together forever, but like, you didn't have to just really, really ruin that and like create this cheating storyline. It's like, what is that? I just can't. Elliot, you're canceled.
Ray's about to be canceled if he doesn't start snorting and all this stuff. No, I agree. And listen, you know, Euphoria's done some great, you know, when it comes to queerness, but season two was a storyline about two girls fighting over a guy who blackmailed Jules and threatened to kill Maddie and himself in front of her. So it loses the plot very easily and very quickly. And I think when it does center on queerness, it makes the biggest connection with audiences. And you may be saying, Julia, that's not true because I saw so much stuff about Maddie and Cassie and whose side you're on. And I agree with that. But I think when it comes to the queerness of it all, it connects with the right audience.
Yeah.
Whereas when it's a Maddie and Cassie thing, it's the wrong viewership.
The Maddie and Cassie thing was just playing into the sexism of viewers. And like, yeah, again, that stuff is real. And, you know, some women do become, I don't even like saying that, but like, I know girls who have become like unhealthily obsessed with guys, right? And like, that's a real thing, sure, but why is this basically the entire plot line of season two? And people are like, Maddie versus Cassie, who do you vote for? You know, like, let's do something more intelligent than this, please.
Yeah. I just want to gatekeep the show forever, to be honest.
I am curious, season three is supposed to be a time jump, perhaps 5 years.
What? That's not possible.
So.
That doesn't make any sense. What happened with the Lori thing?
No.
How could they jump 5 years?
That is how they're fixing the storyline. They're like, the suitcase? Let's forget about it. Let's move 5 years in the future. Because they can't close that storyline because they f***ed up.
But. Okay, whatever.
Somebody tell me what happened to the suitcase and Lori and all that.
They're gonna do a bridge episode of Zendaya, like Zendaya, like getting the money to her and being like, okay, bye.
Peace out. I'm sober now.
Anyway,
Jesus.
Thank you guys for listening. I also do want to note before we log off, like, I did not, when I was mentioning Hunter's whiteness, that was not at all like like an erasure of her transness in the slightest. I wanted to introduce the topic of intersectionality. Like, that's all I wanted to do.
I think you were right.
Absolutely. No, but I wasn't saying, like, I wasn't like taking a stance or doing anything. Like, like I said, the comments that Hunter receives is disgusting. And even just existing as a trans individual, regardless of who you are, is, you know, fucking exhausting in the world. And I, you know, have the utmost love and respect for Hunter Schafer and her character of Jules. And so I just want to make that note.
I just think that you were completely right to bring up intersectionality. And I think that, like, the thing about privilege and conversations on privilege is the point is, like, yes, you can be oppressed. And, like, Hunter Schafer unfortunately faces a lot of transphobia, which is terrible.
Yeah.
But also, like, yeah, she has privilege. She's white, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just, like, I just wanted to, like, contextualize it and just...
I was just trying to say she's more accepted than, like, some...
Than, like, yes. People. Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Of course. But she still absolutely faces the utmost obstacles I couldn't even fathom. I just think sometimes
people struggle to, like, understand that two things can exist at the same time.
Right, right.
And I just wanted to note that, like, yeah, she is unfortunately oppressed and, like, faces transphobia and also is white and skinny and, like, you know... also has privileges there, so, yeah.
I just do think it's astonishing to me that apparently Sam Levinson couldn't fathom a bigger woman, but is writing storylines for a black lesbian, a trans, like, you know what I mean? Like, a guy who has dick pics on his phone but has a girlfriend, a guy who was in love with a man growing up but then his now wife got pregnant so he has to be with her, but you draw the line at a girl, a bigger girl.
It's crazy.
That's, you know, kind of where I was just stumped. Anyways, thank you guys for listening. I really had a good time looking at Euphoria through a queer lens, which seems like an obvious kind of redundant statement because there is no Euphoria without queerness. But it's also worth noting that it's not even close to perfect. And, you know, queer representation as a whole has a long ways to go. And I really want to get to a place in which just all representation, if not, okay, 99% of it, whatever, is queer. And so when there is a hiccup in the road, it doesn't really need to be critiqued. Just like how if you want to critique, you know, white rom-coms, no one's saying, oh, this movie destroyed, you know, white romantic people as we know it, because the you know, the representation is infinite. And so you know, no one's paying attention to a little hiccup in the road.
I think that we should all look at everything as more queer, and we should all queer the world. And
you queer that, Riggy? You queer that?
I love you all, especially our queer listeners. I love you guys the most.
I love you all, and happy earlier Euphoria release date, I guess.
I'm nervous. I'm scared.
I'm scared. It's getting weird.
It's getting weird.
You know that video of Nene Leakes where she's like, it's getting weird.
It is, you guys. It is. But don't worry. It's also getting queer.
Love you guys so much. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed another episode of Miranda and I going on about God knows what this time.
If you'd like to hear more of our ramblings, come back every Wednesday for another glimpse into the one small but strong brain cell Julia and I share.
Unless, of course, this is our season finale.
Well, yeah, but we would have specified that before this outro, right?
I want to say yes, but it also seems like something we'd forget, seeing as you've just pinned us as girls with literally half a brain cell each, so...
Well, I assumed that brain cell was 3/4 mine, and you had that 25% all to yourself.
As Miranda has made clear, join us next week or go back to our previous episodes to keep you quenched for the next 7 days. I'm Julia.
And I'm Miranda. Thanks for listening to us.
Put the P in raspberry. Miranda, you were like really behind on that. That was weird.
I wasn't behind.
You were, Miss 3/4 brain cell. You absolutely were.
Okay, well, you just talk fast and I was taking my time.
Leos are always taking their time, and it's like, for what exactly? For what?
It sounded good. Our audience loved it. It sounded good.
And you know what?